could roll the tape, please. My name is Michael Arndt. I teach at Cal Lutheran University, and this week and next week I'm on the teaching staff doing drama. One of the classes that I did earlier this week was a class on plays from the Vietnam era called The Legacy of Vietnam. In the summer of 1968, I spent the entire summer at Holden Village working on the Maverick crew and backpacking on many trails in the area, as most of the work crew people here do during the summer. During that summer, I also spent a great deal of time debating my own position as a newly graduated college person with a 1A draft classification, what I was going to do with regard to my own personal choices about Vietnam. I had opposed the war, and while I was at college, at Oxford College in Minneapolis, I spent a lot of time involved in the war protest movement. In the fall of 1968, I began teaching at Howard Lake Waverly High School in Minnesota, and in September of that year, I got my draft notice. I appealed that draft notice until January of that year, upon which I was again drafted. I again appealed, and I was granted a stay until June, and on June 17th, 1969, I was inducted in the United States Army. As I said, I spent the summer of 1968 backpacking out of Holden Village. The summer of 1969, I spent backpacking out of Fort Lewis, Washington in Tacoma. And the summer of 1970, I spent backpacking in the jungles of Cambodia and South Vietnam. What we are going to present for you tonight is a compilation of writings by Vietnam veterans. Some of these writings were done by veterans who were in Vietnam at the moment the writing took place. Other writing happened after Vietnam. Some of the writings were done in the form of poetry, some were done in the form of prose, some of it was done in the form of letters that were written home during that period. I regret to say I do not have any writings from female Vietnam veterans, of which there were very many. And we have just probably in the last 10 years discovered how much and how deep that effect takes us. I am pleased, though, tonight that I'm able to include among the readers women's voices. And my readers have graciously volunteered for very brief rehearsals, and my stern drama directing, and have shared this writing with me. And so I'd like to introduce the other readers now. Sue Holmes, Jennifer Lee, Kathleen Kading, Robert Nairn, Paul Bosch, and Gary Bannister. Although this Reader's Theater does not have a formal title, I've entitled it Vietnam Revisited. Parts of it were originally performed for the first Vietnam veteran art show and reading in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1980. It's been performed once since then. The first poem is entitled Cries and Questions.
Alone now in our private minds and drifting.
Alone now in a holy peace, echoing. with silent cries and questions.
For you, our guns wrought destruction, and now the silence roars with cries and questions.
Did you kill, they ask us.
Was it right, we ask ourselves.
We are now the new lost generation, adrift on a sea of truth and lies, searching answers to the questions, trying not to hear the cries.
But it always comes back, haunting, late at night, in a silence that belies.
We will never know the answers to the questions.
We will always hear the cries. Patrol in the Ashau Valley, Part 1.
In daylight, brave we paid for beer, smoked and drank to this tiered green wood. Three tiers of jungle wrapped around us, each a note of fear. While in the night, that silent horror, with arms stood ready, wary, scared. In darkness, hunted, knowing evil for what it was and did, and might, without the warmth of light, still do. Were the knights so full of fear, we wondered, in their armored charge, waiting, loath to kill, afraid to die. We had our war in the jungle night. We set the tracers singing quick, lit the night with Willie Peters' ghost, and saw the dark flow blood too much, causing our life to seep away, and with it all our love of day, until that bitch, the morning sun, lit up the bloody ground and golden trees. Soon the birds arrived and took away our dead, and back to beer we went and left, buried in that hidden jungle valley, the things of youth and hope and blood.
Two poems, or perhaps one.
I will forget all the dead brothers soon. And all the drunken hours, all the stone purple dreams of escape, the suicides I put away so gently, wishing I could be as brave. They were my friends who could not be alone. I will be alone and live to tell, but not right away. Soon, but not now. I'm too scared, and I'm not brave. My wife has been to Europe, and she does not talk of it incessantly. She told me so when she asked why I talk of war all day and spend too many hours with Niall, who went to war too, but we never went to Europe. Actually, we do not know where we went, but we do not forget the place easily either. I suppose the Medal of Honor winner, a black man, who was shot in Detroit last year while stealing money so he could feed his family because he did not have a job and had no hope, could not forget where he had been because they would not let him, because he won a medal. He has finally put it all behind him. The point is, after it is all behind, someone said we are supposed to go ahead with the business of life. And I do not know anything about life anymore. Just death. But when I learn, I'll tell everyone. Not now, but soon. Soon.
Fulton Street.
Thank you.
On Fulton Street today, I felt it.
They were starting to let us come home.
Abandoned, alone, stranded, 11 years. Iron men rusting in our tears. Don't start screaming in our ears.
You have found us.
We were never lost. We've been watching. We've been bleeding for your sins.
Coming out is coming in.
Falling down to fall again.
There's nothing here to win.
Yet understanding. Number 68. Will people listen to the words you speak? Will they understand the feelings your eyes portray at the recognition of reality that was born in you as you walked upon the soil of Southeast Asia? Will they only hear the words as war stories, never seeing that you don't glorify what you say and miss the reason for the words to show America and killing as one and all the same? Will it mean anything to anyone that you stepped off a chopper in a jungle clearing landing zone blown there by bombs? Will they understand a hot LZ where the Asian gecko awaits with its call that taunts in the night, "Fuck you! Fuck you!" it wails, or the AK-47 with its crack and green tracers? Now the Uku lizard won't kill, but it will drive you nuts. The AK kills and maims no different from yours, just pointed a different way. Will they believe you when you say, had to worry more about our own anyway? Gunships missing target, artillery missing range, with 50% of all dead and wounded on Uncle Sam's head? Gunships killing you as they shoot at the holder of the AK, or the holder of the liberation flag, or the baby suckling its mother's breast and her with a bullet in her head? Well, America, I don't care if you don't see, don't feel, don't understand. For if you at any time, in any manner, had cared or seen, I wouldn't have to tell you the reality of the Southeast Asian soil. Think hard, America, for the fact is, I am your only son. The Troll in the Ashau Valley, Part 2.
The Ashau is a valley fastness set amid the highlands of central Vietnam. It is ringed by the foothills and gentle plateaus of the enemy's Cordillera, the Southeast Asian mountain range that makes up most of the hill country of North and South Vietnam. The Ashau and the highlands were the scene of the most brutal battles in the Vietnam War, and the stretch of hills from Khe San to Pleiku claimed more American lives than any other piece of land in Asia. Yet, at sunset on Khe San, 7 shades of greenery ripple across the hills under the red-tinted sky above Laos. And at dawn, in a chopper at 2,000 feet, the golden rays of the sun reach out from the East China Sea and touch the hilltops, reflecting into the valley like the light of a million emeralds. I have never seen such utter beauty anywhere else on earth.
Saigon, daughter. Heat.
Voices rising, falling.
Air.
Wet and gray. Spiced and sick with charcoal smoke hanging.
Water.
In ditches. Still with oil and slime. Green. Thickening.
Shacks.
With walls of flattened beer cans. Gray tin roofs, half orange. Rusting.
Flags.
Once yellow and red, scorched white and brown, stiff, crumbling.
Girls, walking mud-rutted roads, high black shoes, golden silk floating.
Quin Yu, I want you.
Heat.
Voices rising, falling.
Skies.
Particled in brown, some fired dust clouds sweeping.
Wires.
From tipped, broken, sparred telephone poles, twisted, frayed, sagging.
Garbage.
Scattered over streets of broken concrete, smashed grapefruit, torn gardenias, baking.
Fish.
Laid in the dust to dry, fly covered, eyes gone, brown, curled, parching.
Girls on motor bicycles in clouds of blue, white gloved hands, long black hair flying.
Quin Yu, I want you.
Heat.
Voices rising, falling.
Signs.
With street names on building corners, jagged with bullet punctures, bent, chipped, peeling.
Bunkers.
Low behind limped barbed wire, rotted sandbags spilling.
Temples.
With needle spires shrouded in ash, walls soaked in incense, mildew, gray vaulted chambers looming.
Coffins.
Gleaming amber in stacks and stacks, honey coated in lacquer syrup, open, inviting.
Girls
in flower gardens, toasting tall, smeared glasses, bottomless black eyes in almond corners, pink frosted mouths curving,
drinking thick, clear liquid,
sweet, sweet, sweet and choking, crushed jasmine petals and sugar.
Quin Yu, I want you.
Heat.
Voices murmuring, murmuring.
Breezes.
Through night of damp black cotton, soft, cool, caressing.
Lanterns.
From behind shutters of silent white houses, dim, yellow, flickering.
Arms.
There in gentle golden light, warm, perfumed, waiting.
Silver flash.
Walls crashing.
Plaster pouring.
Blue glowing steel slicing.
Girls on white sheets drenched in red.
Screaming.
Reaching.
Quin Yu, daughter of fear, I want you. A letter from Vietnam, Christmas 1969.
In Vietnam, it's 95 with clear blue skies. There's a slight wind which catches the powdered soil and coats everything with a grimy dullness. Vietnamese women and children shuffle back and forth under straw hats, warbling their quaint dialogues. Army deuce and a half rumble up the dirt roads, and everywhere are men in green talking, joking, staring lustfully, or caught in their own reverie of home. In some of the barracks, an aluminum tree with blinking colored lights serves as a sore reminder of what is approaching in the world. The trips to the post office become more frequent now, with mail being treasured goods. And yet, 15,000 miles makes Christmas just another day, a day with whose passing that distance shrinks. Christmas Eve. Everyone is getting drunk while the beer lasts. There's a group of guys driving around the LZ on a vehicle singing Christmas carols while flares, smoke grenades, and mortars pop intermittently. At midnight, everyone shoots up flares of all colors for 5 minutes. It's like the 4th of July.
15,000 miles. 15,000 miles ago, a star shone in the east. Or was it just a flare? And a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all men should be, or was it, greetings, you have been selected by your friends and neighbors. And Mary, being great with child, pondered in her heart, or was it my lonely, frightened wife, her first time drawing near. The babe was born in a barn with cows and straw and dirt. Or was it that woman and her child whose house we had to burn? Some shepherds standing in a field saw sky ablaze and angels sing, peace on earth, goodwill. Or could that be the rocket burst that brought to five a lasting peace? Three wise men riding camels brought gold and myrrh and such. Or were they fat senators who came in APCs giving candy to kids dying of disease? They say this kid, when he grew up, preached the golden rule of loving neighbor as oneself. Or was that the Army Conduct Code's never giving up? The greatest thing about this babe was that he died so men could live. I think out here I met him once as he dove atop a frag. Each night I search the east for stars, but all I see are flares. Among the victims of the Vietnam War were the non-combat victims in Vietnam. Among them, young girls who were forced to support their families and save their own lives by turning to prostitution. This is a poem about one such woman, Tangerine.
Tangerine
is in the sky.
Tangerine is the sun exploding.
Tangerine is colors. Hair.
Raven.
Sable.
Mahogany.
Chestnut.
Eyes.
Violet.
Plum. Burgundy.
Cocoa.
Teeth.
Snow.
Pearl.
Alabaster.
Cloud.
Mouth.
Claret.
Cranberry.
Port.
Ruby.
Neck.
Citron.
Saffron.
Apricot.
Peach.
Arms.
Honey.
Butterscotch.
Caramel.
Mango.
Breasts.
Cream.
Cinnamon.
Coral.
Raspberry.
Lips.
Maize.
Flax.
Champagne.
Rose.
Legs.
Amber.
Tamarind.
Bronze.
Gold.
Tangerine is high and above and burning silent, alone in an ice sky. And tangerine
is men and men.
And men and men.
And men and men.
And men and men and men and men.
And
tangerine
is burning silent, alone in an ice sky. And
tangerine
is lemon wrists running chair.
Night flare drop tonsonote. Tet is the Vietnamese celebration of New Year, and in 1968, Tet was also a major offensive launched by the North Vietnamese against the Americans and the South Vietnamese. And the enemy reached into the heart of Saigon, and Tonsonote Air Base, which was located on the very edge of Saigon.
It is Tet, some Vietnamese excuse for fireworks, and the war sneaks into Saigon, while young girls from villages in the Delta, who have learned to use makeup and read comic books, suck off fat Air Force colonels. All is joy. Roman candles chase tracers. Little rockets bark at dancing dragons. In the foreign cemetery at the entrance to the base, dying soldiers are having a colorful firefight. Six Vietnamese MPs, eager to watch, run into a minefield and throw yellow confetti for yards. In 100P Alley, the boy pimps laugh, sell three-day-old sandwiches to Americans afraid to come out of their rooms. For the first time in years, no chauffeur-driven Mercedes bull through the streets. and trapped in the bar at the officer's open mess, off-duty pilots in dirty flight suits stand in front of air conditioners, sweating. Overhead, frightened planes circle, shedding magnesium tears that burn deep holes in the night. But the dark, like the VC, always comes back.
In March of 1970, I was involved in my first major firefight or combat. A soldier in Vietnam who has not seen combat yet is called a charity. The following dialogue was written down immediately after a firefight happened, and it was recorded dialogue of what had just happened, and I sent it home in a letter, and we offer to you now, Cherry Kill 370.
Hit the ground, some shots.
More shots.
Move up.
Pistol belt unbuckled.
Get rear security out.
Cover that gully.
Firing stops.
Is everybody okay?
Body low to the ground, finger on trigger, weapon off safe.
We're going out to check.
Guide on 1-9er, this is 6-4 Mike, up 200, repeat 4 rounds, hotel echo.
Rapid succession of shots from out beyond the perimeter. Men coming back in.
We got one bluish shit away.
One rucksack containing rice, one Japanese rifle, one cigarette lighter with bullet in it.
Man, Mike, you should have seen, almost blew his leg off.
2 months of cherry, now we hit it all the time.
Just like a fucking turkey shoot.
Got a letter from my mom yesterday. She wanted me to put it in the paper about me getting that Bronze Star. Man, she knows how I feel about this war.
War? Hell, self-preservation.
Did you see 1-6 cut up that bag of grass? What a waste.
Yeah, we killed us ahead. He was probably floating down that trail.
Get it on. We're moving out.
Did you ever see a dead gook before, Mike?
Blood.
Bermuda shorts.
Silver buckle.
Bone.
About 30 years old.
Mouth open,
eyes staring.
A calf patch pinned to nose.
Move ahead, keep your eyes open.
This is really a war, and I'm afraid. One of the other victims of war, as in all wars in all places, are the children. Children who grow up much too fast because of the circumstances. The following poem is written in the voice and persona of a 12-year-old Vietnamese child. Tu Do Talk.
Now you finit Vietnam GI, where you get steam job and blow bath. Book who dead go home. All wounded number one, okay now. Bowls bread, bellies filled, taxi girl nice again. Taxi driver knows some more rich. Dinky Dow American go Dinky Dow America. Shrinking bird disease stop. Saigon cowboys all go Ho Chi City. Number 10 war stop. New number war begin. Buku kilos of kilos. Buku piasters. Buku people. Buku gone. What you do, GI? What you name now? You say Xin Loi. Xin Loi? Sorry about that. Sorry about that? You finny Vietnam. Vietnam finny you.
The 105-millimeter artillery piece was one of the main support cannons in the Vietnam War. And after it was fired, the empty brass was often used and salvaged by soldiers, many of them cutting it off and turning it into ashtrays, which were highly polished and engraved. And sometimes they were salvaged by the Vietnamese themselves and put into some unusual uses, as in this poem called The 105-millimeter Vase. Gleaming.
Graceful.
Golden.
Inward.
Outward.
Upward flowing.
Once brought forth death, destruction. How fitting now it serves a coffin.
hammered, molten, shaped and polished, now in tombs, a dream, demolished.
Those on whom it once rained terror fought to overcome the horror, and from it beauty wrought.
Strange things happen in war. Against death, the wit employs art to create. Strange still more how witless selves, with their own secret art, draw together to overcome their fate.
In the fear and in the dying, shock sweeps a man and woman together. A wanting deep beyond knowing creates a child to make forever. But in war, ironies mount unending.
Now their altar holds the vase, with cold black ashes till eternity buried. Inside, a child rests in brass and space.
Although I've been back from Vietnam almost 19 years, as have many of my brothers, the war still lives very strongly for the Vietnam veteran. It's a uniform we really never can take off, as is seen in this short reading called Sundays After the War.
At first there was no problem. There was no problem because you could still remember easily how afraid you were and how angry and how clear it was that he would kill you if you did not kill him. A year later, after you had gotten back home and were having breakfast on a bright, quiet Sunday morning and had no idea your mind was working on it, somewhere between the orange juice and the coffee, it slipped without warning into your head that you weren't angry anymore and you were only a little afraid, but it was still clear that if you hadn't killed him, he would have killed you.
Fare thee well.
Fare thee well, my brother. Dale told me of your passing, my friend. With 18 wheels rolling hard, 18 wheels in the air, twisted steel, broken bones, shattered glass, and a life snuffed out. They tried, my brother. Those people in white coats and screaming lights, they tried so hard, but DOA was all they could say on their gray and rainy flight. Just as you had done in the NAM. Combat medic's badge ain't given for nothing. Risking body, risking soul, not caring when the Grim Reaper pointed to those you struggled over as the bullets flew all around you. I hope that all the men you did save remember. On this gray and rainy night, combat medic's badge on your chest. 18 wheels to the sky. 18 tombstones to signify the passing of your life. Well, let the universe receive you, my brother. May it learn from your wisdom, the wisdom within 18 wheels no longer rolling, dead and broken both ye be. But you know, my friend, it's weird. In fact, it's downright strange. I never even knew your last name. Fare thee well.
I think it's the wish of all soldiers in all places to never have war happen again. American dream. I live in an old, graceful section of the city near the river, on a sleepy block lined with tall, ancient trees, whose vaulting summer branches protect the houses under a cathedral arch of green. Here, everything says tranquility. Near the end of my block, just before a quaint little park, there's a small gray house with a red brick chimney covered with ivy in a minuscule green yard enclosed by a white picket fence. A Vietnamese family lives there. It used to be, after I came back from the war, where I had fallen in love with a Vietnamese girl, and she had been killed, and I had been wounded, and my dreams were filled with blood and screams, that I was afraid I would never see a Vietnamese again. But this family and a few others escaped in the collapse of their forces, and now their two small daughters deliver my newspaper. I say, come on, to them. But they are too young to understand that it means I was there. They only smile. Sometimes, very late at night, although it's out of my way, I walk past the small gray house. I walk by slowly, drinking in everything. The night is soft and cool. There's a light summery breeze, and the smiling saffron moon, haloed in bright pale lemon, joins with the golden glimmer of the street lamp to turn the sky above a friendly velvet gray. The little house is quiet. The ivy across the roof rustles gently with the breeze. Through a tiny window, a single yellow lamp glows warmly. Inside, the clock on the wall marks the night. Steadily, 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 its pendulum swinging, surely, 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 measuring calm, even heartbeats, tranquil, easy breaths. The Vietnamese are sleeping. Peace.